Hey there, it's your best friend Keith Malley. I think this book audio is going okay. I do recognize, of course, that this came out, The Great American Novel, in 2010, and there's some language we don't use anymore. Yes, I'm ashamed to say the R word was indeed in that book. I probably didn't need to do a Japanese impression to explain how Japan would talk to America about how to get rid of Godzilla. But I didn't say it was the Japanese prime minister. I said Japanese important man. And we don't really know this guy. That could be exactly what he sounds like. I don't know. Anyway, I'm glad you guys are digging it. Thank you very much. In fact, this is a true story. If you know Sadia, this listener that was in love with me, but then didn't feel she was getting the love back, and so she started making suicidal threats and writing No Exaggeration Knife Company, CCing Keith and the girl on him, saying, they want me to buy your knife so I kill myself. Then goes on Reddit and is like, Kenda's leaving Keith and the girl. Maybe she'll spill on all the crimes Keith has committed. I don't know what's going on. It's a whole fucking mess. Just got an email from her. Subject, listening, Sadia says. Then the body is to your book. Hooked, I'm a fan. We're back, baby! By the way, I don't know if this is true. Somebody just told me this, that Sadia starts her Wordle with the word crazy, C-R-A-Z-Y, every day. Is that true? And then she writes an email to the New York Times about how they got the answer wrong. A color has a U in it, mate. Oh, shit, I'm doing voices again. All right, anyways. Here we go. Chapter 3 and 4 of The Great American Novel. We talk about my time in the army. Me on mushrooms. Me in jail. It's all right here. Chapters 3 and 4. Of course, pick up the book right now for only $5.99 at Amazon. You'll see that book and the brand new book, The Dad Emails, at keithandthegirl.com/dadbook. Here we go.
Chapter 3. Government issued. I don't get art, like drawings. I don't get it. I don't like to read. I don't like to go to museums. I don't think I Love Lucy and the Honeymooners were ever funny. And people are always surprised. Address the ball. Hello, ball. Hilarious. Is Lucy stuffing too many chocolates down her dress? Whoa, that conveyor belt sure moves fast, doesn't it, Lucy? People don't understand why I don't like to read. Even if I'm reading the most entertaining book, I still feel like I'm working. Books are better than movies. Look, you see a bad movie, you wasted 2 hours of your life. You read a bad book, you wasted 4 days. Or in my case, 3 months. Fuck books. Reading's for homos. Well, at least see an art movie. A movie with no ending. I'm expected to make up the ending myself. I could have saved $9 and made up the entire movie. It would have been funnier, and there would have been a lot more tits in it. And as if art museums weren't bad enough on their own, now they put them together in a modern art museum. Yay! Art should look like a picture, for God's sakes. Poetry should rhyme, and art should look like a picture. How do artists price their crap? The other day, I'm at this artsy bar, and a painting was done by a local artist. It's a giant floating ring in the sky over farmland. It was priced at $1,700. It was watercolor. He finished that and said, $1,600. Nah, $1,700. How about $1,750? No, that wouldn't be fair. Okay, $1,700. That's what it is. That's fair. He was done with the painting in 1 hour, and he looked at it contently. You know, I can honestly say what I just drew in an hour is worth $1,700. 4R, -1.39, K1, pi, ? What goes next? I'm sorry, I have no clue what comes next in that sequence. But you know what? I can be in a room filled with people and have a normal conversation. So I guess it's all give and take. You take the good with the bad. Don't think I don't get it. What I do isn't really important. If a large meteor is about to crash into the Earth and only a few can survive in the small meteor shelter, I got a feeling I ain't gonna make the cut. Do we take the doctor, the teacher, the therapist, the scientist, or old funny boy over there? Yes, we must have comedy in the new world. Then again, I wonder about my role in comedy also. I mean, I'll listen to Dennis Miller, an incredibly witty, funny, successful guy, and I'll start crying because I have no idea what the hell he's talking about half the time. He makes me feel so fucking stupid. This world's fucked up like a Zeitgeist parabola, an Aesop's seventh fable, Cuban in a Turk's bathhouse designed for Pavarotti. Yeah, I love you, Dennis. What the fuck are you trying to say? Pavarotti's fat. I get that part. If you stuck me at a chess table with the head of Mensa, I'm sure the game would be over in seconds, followed by Mensa high fives and a wine sniffing contest. But if you get me in an alley with that same Mensa kid, I'll bet you $5 I'd kick the ever-living shit out of him. God, I hate that kid. I recently read the Mensa webpage. The Mensans, how cute, are the people with the top 2% IQ of the entire world. And that got me thinking about starting my own group, a group for people dumber than the Mensans. And one day, we're going to kick all their asses. I'm glad I'm not one of the annoying intellectuals that I hate, but I wouldn't mind being a little more intelligent. For example, I can't wink. I don't know how to do it. In the army, I put a patch over my left eye to aim my rifle. I was an expert shooter, but I couldn't keep only one eye closed. And people are amazed by this, amazed by my lack of learning the simplest of skills. As half an adult, I locked myself in my mom's room. I wouldn't leave until she taught me how to blow a bubble. I was in high school, and I couldn't blow a damn bubble. And my mom tries to teach me, okay, now, you see how I'm flattening out my gum? Okay. Then you, and she closes her mouth, and just, and out comes a huge bubble. Okay, thanks, Ma. Thanks. Ever play chess and forget whose turn it is? Ever play chess and forget what color you are? It's not like you're playing pool and you've been drinking and socializing, going back and forth to the game, and you forgot if you're solids or stripes. I was playing chess. I was hunched over the game the entire time. I'm just smart enough to know that I'm dumb. That is my curse. I look at my watch when I'm lost like it's a compass. This started when I was a kid. I'd walk in the wrong direction. Then, realizing I've gone the wrong way, I'd check my watch and turn around. This way, if anyone saw me, I wouldn't look like I didn't know where I was going. It looked like I'd just changed my plans. The thing is, I did that so much as a kid, I now do it automatically. Without thinking, the arm comes up and the head goes down. I'm in a restaurant looking for the bathroom. I end up in the kitchen. Do I just excuse myself and try another hallway? No, I instinctively look at my watch, then turn around, as if to say, well, I was going to cook my own food, but when I realized what time it was, I decided it would be just much wiser to simply go to the restroom instead. I guess that guy isn't a fucking retard. Keith, you're giving away all these stories on how retarded you are, but they gave you a rifle in the army? Oh, you caught that earlier, did you? And not just a rifle. They gave me guns, grenades, mines, anti-tank missiles. Keith, in your book, you wrote missiles and with only one S. Missiles has two S's. You don't need to know how to spell them to shoot them, my friend. First, before we begin, regarding the cool, slick military recruitment commercials you see on TV, it looks like it'd be fun to crawl under barbed wire through mud in full battle gear carrying a rifle. Let me tell you, it's not. It actually isn't fun at all. Whether Mudvayne is blaring in the background or not, it's not fun. And here's something else to keep in mind. While it looks very cool to see U.S. soldiers firing rockets and throwing grenades, jumping tanks over hills, and parachuting off a plane with an AK at the ready, remember, other countries have commercials too. But before we get into me being in the United States Army, we need to address what led me to getting into it, the United States prison system. My older brother Mike and I were now in our second apartment, and after getting kicked out of our first, we had another kid, Matt, move in with us. Matt was the son of the church choir director, and he didn't get along with his father either. The first time my dad found out three guys were living in the same place, he knew for sure that all his kids are not only on drugs, but they're all gay as well. Dad's homophobic because one time he was in a bathroom and a gay man asked him if he wanted to have sex. Dad's been a wreck ever since. Hello, son, oh my God! There are three grown men in this apartment. I certainly whatsoever under any circumstances did not realize you to be a homosexual. I didn't raise you to be no homosexual as well. Dad, I'm still not gay. I didn't ask if you were gay or not. I don't give a flaccidy flunk if you are happy. What? Gay means happy. I asked if you were a homosexual. You certainly cannot be happy if you are a homosexual. I'm not a homosexual, Dad. Okay, goodbye. Did I go wrong somewhere? No, I did not. I only pray you have this okay with you and your God. Okay, Dad, thanks for stopping by. It's a pleasure as always. First a sigh, then... No, son. I don't think you really mean that. My dad's still as anti-gay as he ever was. You know the gruff-voiced actor Harvey Fierstein? My dad honestly believes his voice became gruff like that from all the cum he swallowed. It's weird, my dad was so anti-gay, but would use the words penis and rectum like he owned stock in them. You know what he does, don't you? he has men put their penises inside his own rectum. Like, Dad, come on already. I'm 20 years old. I get how it works. Beside, the whole family's together to watch Mrs. Doubtfire, a nice wholesome movie. Nothing's wrong with those words. It's what they do. Why does it bother you? Are you gay? Look at the lamp. Look at the light bulb. Your eyes are dilating. Are you on drugs? Are you gay? Do you allow men to insert their penises into your rectum? Okay, of course I don't. I don't even get why you're bringing this up now. Your feeble mind couldn't even begin to comprehend. The landlord in our second apartment was run by a rich, sweet, eccentric pastor. And I mean rich. For example, he owned General Grant's sword. The actual sword. Anyway, I soon found myself owing plenty of back rent because I was so bad with money. But I got out of it by telling him I felt like he was the father I never had. And it helped, but it creeped me out to keep playing the sick game with him. He was falling in love with me. Then one day I found a loan company in a newspaper willing to take a chance on me. And maybe you've seen their ad. Don't pay your bills? Never plan to? Bad credit? No credit? Will you try to fuck us over? Call now. So I make up that I have a great job to show I won't be late on payments. I have a great job, so the ridiculous interest doesn't bother me. Of course it doesn't. It turns out they're willing to give me $3,000. They say I'm all approved and they send me all the proper forms, but I need to send $250 for processing. They're a commercial loan company, so I figure maybe this is normal. Matt lends me the money I don't have, and I send the check to West Coast Financial, the company based in California. But I couldn't wait. A few days before I was to have the money in my hand, I started buying things using checks. Pizza, video games, clothes, everything. All on money I didn't have yet. Don't jump ahead. But you're right. The check never came. The guy handling my claim is on vacation. On the day he's to be back, I call again. This time the whole company's gone. That's when Matt and I go to a new apartment in Garrett, Pennsylvania, a one-street town with a population of 4. I'm going undercover because of all my bad checks until I'm able to cover them. Mike moved back home. Matt and I were sleeping on mattresses in the one-bedroom apartment with no electricity because we moved in as soon as we knew the police were looking for us. We were on the floor, shivering in the winter cold, following a chain letter's directions by flashlight. We were soon going to have more money than we could count. How can't money chain letters work? I mean, sure, I'm not the brightest, but Matt was a genius. We followed all the rules, gave $1 to the 5 people on the list, and prayed to God. God had to help 2 Catholics in need. My dad was a priest. His was a Catholic church choir director. There is no way this could fail. I don't get how it failed. We put our name on the list like it said, and we had backaches from all the raiding and licking of stamps. We couldn't understand why the mailbox was always empty. I sent a dollar to each of the 5 people, put my name where number 5's was, and sent the list out to 100 people just like the man did before me. Then each of those 5 people will do the same, and not only does this keep going until my name is off the list, but think of all the hundreds who are sending letters to another 100 people in the meantime, all ready to give me a dollar each. When you think at least one person would have to give me a buck? Nope. Which is their prerogative. I mean, if they want to burn in hell. Somehow I'm able to scrape together $400 from unemployment. Garrett has no jobs. And I buy a Volkswagen. I get an estimate on the price needed to fix up yet another junk car as I'm pushing this heap of shit up an icy hill right outside a garage. Soon a man calls out my name and he gets out of the Jeep. Keith, instinctively I turn around. Yeah? You're under arrest. Maybe you saw me on Cops, hands on the car, legs spread, frisked all over, just like the movies. I was a busted convict. Somerset's public enemy number 1. To this day, I don't know if we were being stalled as the cop was coming to the garage. Matt's dad told the cop Matt was getting a car fixed and then I lived with him, so I know what led the cop to us. But what was taking place in the garage earlier was a little bizarre. The guy in the garage getting the work done before us made us wait at the garage for an incredibly long time by telling the workers how pissed off he was that he wasn't allowed to carry a shotgun into a bank. This old hillbilly's going on and on about how in the old West you can carry it around, and he couldn't understand why people would complain when he took the shotgun to a school, a hospital, a church. But his rates really didn't concern me now, and thinking back, all of a sudden they didn't seem so funny. I had no money, and I wasn't going to ask someone for some. I was going to jail. With court costs and added fines, the checks added up to $2,000, but I was told by the magistrate $40 would be taken off of what I owe for each month that I spent incarcerated. Dun, dun! I knew that would take a while, but I can do it. And besides, I'd convince myself I'd be learning something. And that's the secret to life, I believe. You gotta keep learning. I just keep learning the hard way. 2 months later, a public pretender, I mean defender, tells me the magistrate was wrong. I can't sit out the money. It turns out I've been rotting in jail for nothing. And that's pretty dramatic, right? I was rotting. I get a hearing and I appear in court. The DA brings up my case and the 8 bad checks. My public defender's brilliant rebuttal? Yes, Your Honor. My client did indeed write 8 bad checks. I find the defendant guilty on charges of fraud, bad checks, public dishonesty, yada, yada, yada. I'm sorry, Keith. The public defender tries to explain. I did everything I could. Yes, Your Honor, my client did indeed write 8 bad checks. That's your incredible, well-thought-out attack. Not naively, Mr. Malley thought he had money coming from a fraudulent loan company that never did. Not the checks are all for things like pizza. He wasn't trying to pull off a major scam. Not as soon as he realized the mistake he made, he tried to find a job. Just an amazing, yes, Your Honor, my client did indeed write 8 bad checks. Well, I guess he did everything he could. So I get out of jail and I have to borrow $2,000 from my mom. I was in jail for nothing. Nothing but some funny stories, that is. Let me tell you kids about jail. It ain't no country club, sister. Sure, you can work out for free. And yes, maybe there's ping pong table for your enjoyment. And okay, we had cable TV and sometimes the guards got pay-per-view movies for us. But still, do not let it escape your mind for a second. You do the crime in Somerset, baby. You do the time. Now, jail wasn't as bad as it should have been, and I definitely learned things I never should have known. I can make crack and acid with common household ingredients. I can hotwire any vehicle. I can make a light for my cigarettes out of almost anything. I know how big-time convicts sneak in drugs and run major credit card scams from the even more horrible Somerset prison. I know how to receive welfare checks in jail, and I can play poker with my eyes closed. A fellow prisoner once asked me to go with him around the country with his friends that do those carnivals with all the scam games. When I heard how much money he made, I was very tempted. There were a lot of guys to learn from. I roomed with a child molester that was beaten every day, and the bunk next to mine bedded someone on a murder charge that was waiting to be taken to the big prison. There was a guy who was denied work release, so he sent a judge who denied it a letter threatening to kill his wife and children if he didn't change his mind. I found the thin wall between the guys and girls section, though, and this cool girl kept me sane. She was in jail for bad checks, too, and I have a date in 5 to 10 years. On an average day, you'd get up at 6 a.m., breakfast is French toast or pancakes with eggs. Then you'd go back to sleep until lunch, which was usually soup, a sandwich, fruit, and sometimes a dessert. Between lunch and supper was an hour of recreation. We always extended to 2 hours. We'd lift weights or play ping pong. That should get you ready for society, I think, lifting weights and playing ping pong. Supper was always better than I used to eat in my apartment, and I soon learned to save my desserts from lunch and supper to eat later on the day when I'd be hungry. Lights out was at 10. So as you can see, simply within the 2 months I was there, the murderer had more than paid his debt to society. I'll never forget this one guy, though. Despite being in jail, he ran this loan company scam out of a city in California. First, he charges you $250 for processing. When I get out of jail flat broke, I'm forced to commit the cardinal sin of independence. I have to go back and live with my parents. Let me read that again. I have to go back and live with my parents. When I got out of jail, my brother Mike joined the Air Force, and against my better judgment, but with my dad leaving me no option, I joined the U.S. Army. America's finest. I met this cool recruiter, as though most of the recruiters are pricks, and I'm convinced to protect the nation. I take some incredibly hard tests to see if I can be a linguist, and honestly guessing on the last half, I pass with the necessary 92%. I decide on learning Arabic at the military linguistics school in California, but that class wasn't ready after basic training, so I was put in Russian instead. What if that's not why I signed up for the Army in the first place? Too bad. I'm proud of you, boy. Now be an officer. I'm not making a career out of this, Dad. You know, I'm not going to be an officer. What the hell's wrong with you, son? Is my boy a racist? What? Officers get the nice things. Do you realize the money and the nice things they get? Think, boy. Quit talking stupid. Well, I'm glad you're proud. I've been proud a lot of times, boy. Don't talk stupid. When you leaving? About a month. Good. Reupholster all the furniture. When he found out the Russian class was over a year long, my dad went insane. How on God's green earth do you believe you can pass a class over a year long? You said that about the first test I passed. Thanks for the support. You're just going to end up in jail again. You'll see. It's jail for you, mister. That's all you know. I go to basic training in Missouri during the freezing winter. The only thing that got me through it was the women. We were the first to have an integrated boot camp. And knowing that there's something in the world I am flawless at. Shooting a rifle. Though we were from hunting country, my dad never taught us to hunt. He never hunted. I guess when you're born on the land, you gain the knowledge through osmosis or some shit. Whatever they call it. Who cares? Hand me a spit can. In 2 months, I'm in Monterey, California, the most beautiful place I've ever seen. Of course, that could have been because before classes started, we would clean the large institute like a 9-to-5 job. Area beautification, they would call it. Just like I thought the U.S. Army would be like. The stuff of commercials. The Marines fought Volcron, the volcano monster. I picked up stray twigs. And this is where I think I became a man. You see, I think everyone goes through a big change in their lives when they go from being a boy or a girl to being a man or a woman. When you learn about life, take it all in, and realize living has everything to do with learning. Most people go through this in college when they are around people from different walks of life. Everyone from every extreme was in this institute for a military intelligence job. Every branch of the armed forces, every type of person. I ended up with Rob. I made a good friend during area beautification called Robert. He and I skipped work every day as if we were playing hooky from junior high or something. In the beginning, we found a way to get out of our daily duties and hang out at our dorm-type barracks. At the same time as they started checking the barracks daily, Rob got housing on base for him and his wife. We'd go out to the clubs in the area, struggle to get up in time for formation the next morning, go to another formation that gives out our assignments, find a way out of it, go to Rob's house to recoup from the night before, and do it all over again. I was under 21 at the time, so I'd have Rob's military ID, which was taken when we had our heads shaved. That head shaving was something else. After they shaved my head, I looked in the mirror, and as I was washing the loose hair off my head, a tear fell from my eye. I didn't care about war, but this was my hair. This was my man mane. When you have your head shaved, you can get away with using an ID from anyone of the same race. Rob used his Texas state ID, I used my military ID. It was funny when two or more underage people went out. With the military and state IDs, it always looked like it was twins night. I wasn't a big drinker when I first moved out of my parents' house. I wouldn't even call myself a drinker at all. It wasn't until I moved to California that I started the binging. And it started with Keystone Light. And then the language classes started. Can you put a note there? If we get a different sponsor, I can just change what the beer is. The language classes were 7 to 8 hours long every day, and soon we had to stop going out. It was time to quit using the books as floor tiles and time to crack them open. I don't know how I learned anything. A few months into the course, DIS, Department of Investigative Services, the group that checks the background of everyone vying for military intelligence clearance, got me out of class for a little meeting. Because of my bad checks and less than stellar grades, they kicked me out of the Russian class. That's when I joined the infantry until my 2-year service is completed. Don't cry. It's okay. I never drank or smoked pot in high school. I was drug-free. Hugs, not drugs. That's something I always say. You can ask around. I'm famous for saying that. It was like having sex. I stayed a virgin throughout high school. How's that saying go? The road to heaven is paved with good intentions. Don't ask me how I did it, but I did. Then one day in my first apartment, I was seduced. Now, I mean, it's not like I put up a big fight, but I was seduced, damn it. From then on, I thought, what's the big deal? I'm already going to hell, which Mike and I decided can't be so horrible during one of our Satan talks. It was the same thing with drugs. Once I finally did it, I figured, what's the big deal? And it all began with a rave in Sacramento with ecstasy. Rob took me to this party in celebration of my 21st birthday. At the last minute, because the rave's location was kept a secret until the last minute, we find out it's being held at an abandoned airplane hangar. This is it, Rob yelled, getting me all pumped up along with our 7-foot-tall friend Dan. Ready for the mother of all raves? Happy birthday! We find the place, and as we're getting out of the car, I notice something quite odd. There was a long line, like a line for a concert, and everyone in line was a kid. They couldn't be older than 16. Now, we already paid $20 each for the party a few days ago, and we figured we already drove a good 3 or 4 hours getting lost trying to find this place, so we decided we might as well check it out. And I took child development. I know how to handle these kids anyway. As we get closer to the door, we see rent-a-cops frisking people down like it's a high school dance in Harlem. Because we got there late, the kids don't know how to ration, and all the drugs are gone. The cops didn't let anyone bring in alcohol, and all the women were 14 years old. My 21st birthday seemed like a bust. So we went to a nice museum. I'm kidding. A kid whispers to us as he walks by, ecstasy. I grab his arm and whip him around. The three of us each paid $20 for these small white pills, and immediately we swallow them. The night might not have been a bust after all. Half an hour passed, then an hour, soon an hour and a half. We've been had. We couldn't find the punk in the crowd, and we were ready to leave. $60 less and all pissed off. That's when, like a holy vision, we saw it. A banner that glowed in the dark that read, X-DASH-DASY. Needless to say, I did a double take. I didn't know much about raves, but advertising? All right, this is okay. Still in shock, I'm talking to this guy with a goatee and long, ridiculous hair, and I'm like, X? He's like, you bet. X? You're selling X. Yep. I don't know what I wasn't grasping here. X, ecstasy, like I'm going to get high and fucked up, ecstasy. Rob was standing there speechless. Dan was dancing with a 14-year-old somewhere. It turns out it's legal because it's some type of herbal ecstasy that presumably did the same thing the designer drug did. Now remember, this is when the herbal stuff first came out, unlike now where we keep seeing on the news people dying from taking one of these tablets. Now keep that in mind as you listen. Maybe you'll realize how I became so stupid. You're supposed to take 3 or 4 tablets with water on an empty stomach for the full effect. We each buy 20. We give Dan 3, and I swallow down 18 little pills. We didn't have time to waste. Drink lots of water, he tells us. We convince the cops we're old enough to cross the street, and we go to the local 7-Eleven. We use the ATM machine to get money for more pills, and I buy a gallon of water. We go back in and get 20 more pills each and chug water like there's no tomorrow. We're walking around the party with a gallon of water and no one gives a second glance. We see our friend Dan, obviously easy to spot, and he thinks he's dancing to the music, just jumping straight up and down. He's high as a kite and he took 3. We took 40. Somewhere there's going to be a party. Not a single buzz. $200 down the drain. Another year older and deeper in debt. Then I met Jason, another army mate, and we had been both wondering what those wild mushrooms were all about. One day, Jason gets shrooms at a concert he went to, and after class, he was almost done within the year that I had started, we each eat half of the bag. I wanted to feel a real drugs high already, and half a bag sounded like it should do it. Mushrooms taste like shit. Now, it could have something to do with the fact that they grow out of cow shit, but we were never really too sure. It was kind of pathetic, I must admit, when I found myself licking the bag to get every last piece of goodness. It's not until later when we realized the bag should have lasted several people for several days. The mushrooms lasted all day, and at one point, while watching the lines on my mattress move, we were afraid we would be fucked up forever. But close to midnight, it started wearing off. Like I said, I became a drinker in the Army. That was more my speed. I'm a drinker. That's what I do. These kids today with their crazy pills, their grass, their goofballs, their blow, whatever happened to getting drunk? Who made things so complicated? The roaring 20s were fantastic because everybody drank. Now society's falling apart thanks to the crank and the smack. I tried mushrooms once more many years later at the age of 28. This time they were the real thing, the cow's patootie, I called them. Who cares that the next day was the first day at my new job? I'm drunk. Listen, I'm just going to go home. It takes me 2 hours to get to Queens and then another 2 to go to my job. Eh, come on, Keith. Okay. I'm delish. I like when you go into work the day after you bullshit call in sick and someone looks at you and goes, yeah, you still look a little peakish, actually. Oh, do I really, doctor? Okay. The 3.5 grams of mushrooms hit me acid strength all at once in half an hour. First, there was a buzz throughout my body. Then the room started shifting, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas style. I'm shitting in the bathroom laughing as I realize it's going to get crazy. Your floor is funny. Okay, don't leave me alone on this shit. Oh, God, don't leave me alone on this shit. It was the weirdest thing I've ever done. You have no control over how long it'll last. It was 4 hours this time, and often I'd bug out and wish it wasn't happening. The whole thing definitely would have been better had I not been throwing up or getting that gagging feeling. And getting thrashed, by the way, while gagging is so odd and sick. You ever see Osmosis Jones? There's only room for one of us here. Except it was more like, get the fuck out. The shrooms were telling the bear to leave its home. I'm the more complex drug, and this body's mine now. I could still tell what was real and what wasn't, and the next day I remembered everything, but I believed this would be the last time I'd do hallucinogens. It was too freaky the way Ron Popeil looked like the devil. And I mean, sure, Ron looks like the devil normally, but he really looked like the devil, dude. I can't even tell you. I didn't really hallucinate the first time I did mushrooms back in the Army. I was just very happy. Those were the kinds of mushrooms people think of. These new ones, though, were hardcore hippie shit. My buddies were 10 feet tall. I saw a bike and I saw all the directions it could travel. I would go outside and have to remind myself that this wasn't a good chair left out, but in fact, it's just garbage. My buddy Adam is able to make a weird clown face by smiling wide. And when he'd do this, he'd make his eyes bug out so it's extra super creepy. And I'm like, ah, holy shit, stop that. Oh, sorry. Nah, do it again. Okay. Oh, stop it. Oh, all right. Do it again. On the way back to the apartment, this time to experience the roof, I stockpiled water. Just before I walked into the bodega, everything was normal. For 3 to 5 seconds, no colors ran and everything was the right size. And I told my buddy what was happening. And I'm like, I'm not confused. I know it'll come back. And then all the round fruit became waxy and grew in size. Yeah, there it is. I couldn't stop talking about how weird it all was. This is so funny. Oh my God, this is so weird. This isn't right. A car's not supposed to look like that. What's he doing? That's not how a person walks. This must be that new medical asset I've been hearing about in the news. My friend Adam was contemplating the universe while our other buddy Craig heard voices telling him how evil he was. While he was sitting down, Adam would be lying on his back trying to explain something to me that was across the way. And then he'd go, oh, wait, that's what's good about this. I can stand up and show you. And he got up, happy to know he knew how to walk. I was told I was very logical tripping. We have to move from this area. Why, Keith? We just have to. And we did, and it made sense. An artist's apartment, not a place to trip. Another brilliant move I made was that I took everything out of my pockets before we'd ever go outside. I didn't want some girl to smile at me, and I end up handing her my wallet. Do you have a light? No, sorry, but you can have my shoes. I like experiencing everything, and I feel good knowing I can relate to a tripper, but I didn't see swallowing cow shit again anytime soon. It's funny to wonder who's tripping when I'm walking the streets, though. Now I think everyone's on acid. That guy's high, and him, he's on some whacked out shit. Oh, look at her. Definitely her. Ever wonder, because mushrooms grow out of the cow crap, what the cows are eating? Ever go cow tipping? Ever notice these cows don't give a shit? Because they're always gacked to the nines. If you came up to me and knocked me down when I was high, I'd just laugh. Who cares? We're all brothers. If you keep poking me with a stick long enough, I'll chase you, sure. But come on, cows are only human. You could brand the recipe to a perfect hamburger on the side of a cow, and these strung-out heifers wouldn't even care. If they could talk, they'd tell you how to cook themselves. Barbecue me at medium, 3 to 4 minutes each side. Throw a little seasoning to taste and flip again. This time 30 seconds each side. I prefer the A1 marinade, but whatever. Either way, I'm moolicious. The next day, we went out to eat at an Argentinian restaurant where I ate cow brains and kidney and steak. I devoured everything about a cow within 24 hours. Top of the food chain, baby. Ever want to destroy a human being? Assuming they've never tripped before, sneak some serious mushrooms into their food. For an extra fuck you rate, die and everybody hates you all over their bedroom walls. Wait for your place in hell. That's it for me on getting stoned. Time for a government allowing Budweiser. After all, we call this USA for a reason. Now let me tell you a little bit about my army roommate Brian, who's smart, funny, loyal, honest, and downright sexy. Brian's shy in the beginning if he doesn't know you. For a while, he was just known as Keith's friend, even though he was at the Institute earlier than me when he tried his hand at Japanese. Or Chinese. I don't know, maybe it's Korean. I'm not really a good listener. Brian's a little neat to a disorder. He's a germ freak. I may have taken advantage of that just a little. The poor guy got us through our monthly inspections. If there wasn't an official inspection, I'd rate packing and clearing on my door, and I'd leave my shit all over the room. Packing and clearing is what you write so that whoever's randomly checking the rooms understands that the room's out of order because you're getting ready to move to another base, post, institution, or station. No one important noticed my sign was up for almost a year. Brian wasn't much of a drinker at all. One or two Zimas was a night out. One weekend, we decided to drink in. He got some Zimas, thinking we were buying something to last the whole week. And I got a case of Keystone Light, thinking we were buying what we'd drink for the night. When we got back to the barracks, I realized the hall decided to have another Alcohol Olympics. Lord knows we all needed excuses to drink. A team consists of a guy and a girl, but I didn't realize there was one tonight, so I didn't have time to find a good girl partner. Then I noticed Brian, a virgin to Alcohol Olympics. I put on a skirt someone left in my room and I became Keithrin, and a new team had been forged from the ashes. It was hard to convince Brian to chug with me, but I figured if I always succumbed to peer pressure, it would feel good to at least at once do the succumbing. It was so funny when it was almost our turn because you could just see the burning fire and desire in his eyes. Brian doesn't drink beer, but he wanted this more than anything. This week's competition, the wheelbarrow race. A partner holds his partner's legs as the other races with his hands down to one side of the hall. One chugs a beer while the other chugs two shots of schnapps. Then they change positions and it's back. I'm going to do this. This sounds fun. Then they change positions and it's back to the other end with the shot drinker now chugging beer. Then back all over again one more time. And you know what? We were the only team to break a minute with an unfathomable new record of 58 seconds. The garbage can was at the end of the hall in case there was trouble. We were more than underdogs, yet Brian proved something to America that day. And I'm not sure what it was, but everyone was shocked and impressed. His parents may not agree when I say this, but it was a glorious day indeed. In celebration, I shed my skirt and drank some more. Reminiscing on an amazing victory, Brian drank all his Zima. It was very late by the time I let him sleep. I went back over to what was left of the party. Soon I needed to take a healthy urination, so I headed back to my room. I went into the bathroom. Oh, That was just a reenactment. I then heard some noise outside the bathroom. I figured Brian needed the bathroom because he was ill, so I hurried up. I opened the bathroom door, and there was Brian urinating on the side of my desk in his sleep. "Hey, Brian, what are you doing, man?" It was my desk, but it was still funny as hell. There was a slight pause, and he replied in a goofy voice, "Yeah." And I started laughing again. "Brian, you're pissing all over my stuff, man." "Oh, yeah. Here, champ, use the bathroom." And he slowly walks into the bathroom, closes the door, flicks the switch, so he's now in the dark, and finishes his business. Let's just say he's no marksman. Brian left the Institute before I did. He's now an officer. Sure, we put our lives on the line for you, but what you don't know about is how we piss on the sides of desks and scrape the inside of banana peels to get high. Someone told me, Jason, the mushroom man, and two other friends of ours, how a week earlier they got high from smoking the inside scrapings of banana peels. Always eager to learn, I figure, you know what, even if it doesn't work, how dangerous can bananas be? The other three guys peeled bunch after bunch of bananas and came down to our floor where Brian and I were watching 90210, and they told me they were ready. I knew I'd get a lashing from Brian if he knew my stupidity, so I just said I had to go take care of something. I don't know how many banana cigarettes we smoked before we realized we'd been had. Two people got sick, and Jason and I just felt like dumbasses. And then Brian found out. "What a fucking moron," he said. "But Brian, I just wanted to see if it'd work. I'm learning here. Why are you calling me a moron?" "Oh, I'm not calling you a moron. I'm simply stating that your actions are that of a moronic nature." Chapter 4. Hell's Angels, Somerset. After the army, I moved back into my parents' house. I saved up by working another waiter job, and when I wasn't working, I'd work on little projects to stay out of my dad's way. If he saw I was busy on something, maybe we wouldn't have to communicate. At this time, it was 1996, I was 21 years old, and the main thing I worked on was this autobiographical book. Another project I got excited about was when NBC and Domino's held a contest for best Super Bowl video that featured Domino's Pizza. The winning video would air halftime on Super Bowl Day. The winner would also receive Super Bowl tickets for that year, and coincidentally, my Pittsburgh Steelers were playing. With the video camera I got through Finger Hut, the mail order store that you never have to pay, I was going to make myself famous by making the perfect video. I went out and bought pizza and wings and got my younger brothers and the camera ready. This was gonna rock. "Boy, what is this nonsense about some video?" Yeah, Dad, I'm making a video on Domino's Pizza for the Super Bowl on NBC. "You think you can win, boy? You think you can make a video? You can't even make a gazebo for your own blessed family." "Well, Dad, this could what, boy? Make you famous?" "Yeah, right." I took some cool footage downstairs, then I took the camera upstairs for some more shots, and Dad kept deliberately walking back and forth between the camera and whatever I was taping. Granted, I wasn't filming Francis Ford Coppola material, but come on. "Dad, why are you doing that?" "Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize I can't walk around my own home." "Well, you don't need to be here right now. Can I please finish filming?" "Oh, am I in your precious way? Lord knows I would just hate to be in my boy's precious way while I'm walking around my own home." So I took the camera and tripod back downstairs. "Oh, don't act like you kids can't make your stupid video. You could have done it all day." "Well, you had us cleaning all day." "How convenient. It's all my fault. Well, how else would it be?" We started filming again downstairs, and Dad would pound his feet as he decided he needed to be downstairs too. Then he would start banging pieces of wood and metal against the wall as he walked down the hall to his office. "What?" I tried out for many contests. One day I heard on the radio that Howard Stern was holding a book signing for his second book, Miss America, in Cleveland, Ohio. This was the closest book signing to Pittsburgh, and a Pittsburgh radio station was holding a poetry contest to see what two people would be driven by limo to the Cleveland site. I felt my autobiography was completed at the time, and I honestly thought that if I won, I could slip the book to someone there. Worst case scenario, I couldn't, and I'd still have a chance to meet my idol. The contest ended the same day I heard about it, so I had to throw something together and fax it quickly, but I think it turned out okay for all the pressure. Then I found out, when they announced the winner, it had nothing to do with quality. The winners were chosen at random. Howard and Today's World by Keith Malley. You know there'll be news when he grabs the mic. The great Howard Stern, back for the fight. There for the masses, 20 million strong. That's why those lines are so friggin' long. Another book signing that makes headlines. Over 2 miles long, it blows the minds. The number one talk show America round, city after city picking up the sound. Some people say out of sight, out of mind, and that's probably why he got another fine. Two books are the biggest that there's ever been. Shakespeare's got nothing when it comes to him. From Jackson to OJ, he'll skewer them all. Hotels are trading Bibles for his book from the mall. Sharon Stone acts repulsed, so does Madonna. Deep down, Howard knows, yeah, they all wanna. He doesn't care who you may be, America's sweetheart, Kathy Lee. So Mr. Hypocrite, whatever you think, let me hear you bitch, please make a stink. Just turn off the volume, you bug, you ant. But deep down in your soul, you know you just can't. Huh? Not bad, right? Not bad. I tried to win Guinness's Win a Bar in Ireland contests. 1 year, they had you write in 50 words or less why Guinness is the perfect pint of beer. If your letter was chosen, you were set for life. Here are some of my ideas. Guinness? Prostate exam. I'll take a Guinness, thank you. I look at my kid and I realize I wish my wife had given birth to a pint of Guinness. I wish, instead of milk, Guinness flowed out of my wife's lactating breasts. Oh, I love this shit. Guinness. Is it a beer or is it a meal? Should you brush after every Guinness? Excuse me, you have some Guinness between your teeth. Guinness. Miller created the new red-labeled beer. Budweiser has light, dry, and ice. Guinness. That shit don't ever change. I like Guinness and girls. I don't know which I like better. Yes, I do. Girls. Sorry. I went out with a Guinness the other night. The Guinness got picked up. I didn't. Parquet? Guinness. I don't get that one. I think that one was funny. Oh. I love it. It's perfect. The pint of Guinness, I mean, not your stinky ass. If a Guinness spilled in the forest and no one was around, would it make a sound? Trick question. No one would ever leave a Guinness unattended. I recycle my Guinness. Guinness. Sure, it's an acquired taste, but so is vagina juice. Is it sad to be in a bar all alone drinking a Guinness? Trick question. For when you're with a Guinness, you're never truly alone. I wasn't chosen as the big winner. Knowing that it's the real winners that never give up, I tried again when their contest had you complete the sentence, "The perfect pint of Guinness is." Here are my submissions. The perfect pint of Guinness is $1.50 more than the perfect pint of Budweiser. The perfect pint of Guinness is what makes me call my ex-girlfriend at 3 in the morning. The perfect pint of Guinness tastes just as horrible as all the other pints of Guinness. The perfect pint of Guinness makes daddy come in my room after he teaches mommy not to be a bitch. Guinness never called back. So I decided to try to write a full beer commercial instead. A couple is at a wedding. The man is average, 20-something, tux doesn't fit perfect. We see the back of his new bride. Scanning the area, we see bottles of Heineken, or whoever pays me, my art has no boundaries. The beer is the only thing people are drinking. The ice sculpture is made from frozen Heineken, maybe a fish squirting out beer. The walls are waterfalls of beer. We see the bride's face. She's an ugly pig with a lazy eye and fucked up features. Then we see papers on the table. Welcome to the marriage of Joe Smith and Suzanne Heineken. Then the new slogan comes on the screen. Heineken, whatever it takes. I was always looking for any way to get out of real work, so when Project Greenlight offered regular people a chance to come up with a Sam Adams beer commercial idea that you would later direct, I figured this was my chance at easy living. The ideas flowed through my brain like melted butter on a hot summer's day, the pan hungry for waffle batter. Then later I looked up the government's rules for creating a beer commercial. My plans were immediately shattered in 1,000 pieces. The dreams of a future broken on the cold concrete floor of reality and then stepped on by a little kid splashing through a cool sprinkler on that same hot summer day. Government rules for making a beer commercial. Your television commercial may not contain cartoons, actual drinking, underage persons, mocking of non-drinkers, Santa Claus, inference of lower class drinkers, false promises, indecency. Well, Jesus, what can you do? Here were some of my ideas. First and foremost, my biggest idea was creating a Sam Adams cartoon character. He'd look like Sam does on a bottle, a tiny guy wearing his funny revolutionary hat, and he'd always have a smile, and he'd always be looking for a good time. Cartoon idea number one. Sam Adams walks into a bodega, grabs a Sam Adams, and walks out. The Middle Eastern store owner runs out with profanities, yelling at Sam for not paying his beer. It's okay, Sam replies. He shows the label. It's mine. Sam looks at the camera and winks. Cartoon idea number two. The bartender puts a Sam Adams on the bar. A huge black man and Sam go for it. The black man gets the beer. Pardon me, sir, but I do most believe that is my tasty beverage in your hand. The other man is ready to fight. What, is your name on it? Sam looks at the camera and winks. Maybe he then takes out an old Revolutionary War-era pistol. Screen goes black. Cartoon idea number three. The bartender gives Sam a Sam Adams beer. Do you have ID, sir? Sam holds up the bottle to his face. The picture of Sam and Sam's real face are side by side. Sam winks. As for showing actual drinking on a television commercial, I never noticed that they don't do it. Now that I do, it looks odd. You'll never look at a beer commercial the same again. I just ruined all beer commercials for you. Even the clever Heineken ones. Actual drinking idea number one. A man is taking a beer taste test. We see on the other side of the cardboard he'll be drinking Sam Adams, Budweiser, and Guinness. He drinks from the first glass and licks the Sam Adams off his lips. He puts the beer down. He goes for the Bud but stops short. He goes back to the Sam Adams, stands up, and walks out drinking the Sam. Sam Adams, it's all you'll ever need. As for not allowing underage folks in your commercial, come on! Who's the target audience, for God's sake? Underage person's idea number one. A mother can't get anything to help her screaming baby quiet in church, be it warm milk or her sweet tit. Nothing until Sam Adams. It's all you'll ever need. Then the priest faces the camera, and it's the cartoon Sam Adams himself. He winks. You can't make fun of non-drinkers in TV commercials? What's the point of this rule? I mean, what can you pick on them about anyway? The way they're always wearing tan, never having fun, or always awkward in social circles, having their wife cheating on them with a manly drinker? Like, what would you even say? Mocking non-drinkers idea number one. Sam Adams, now a popular TV persona, you know, you have to think long term, goes to a gravesite, and he pours some Sam Adams on Joe Camel's grave. Joe Camel pops out, and they both smoke and drink as they call book readers pussy little faggots. Santa Claus? You can't have Santa Claus on a beer. What? What's more American than beer, Jesus Christ, and Santa Claus? Because I'd love to fucking know. Like, I'm so sure Santa Claus never popped open a Sam Adams or 20. Why not take the Star Spangled Banner out of sports games while you're at it? Santa Claus idea number one. A dad and his kid are in line waiting for Santa. The kid doesn't seem to care to wait in line so long. We see the dad and kid in the food court enjoying a laugh over two pints of cold, refreshing Sam Adams. Cartoon Sam Adams is one of the elves. He turns to wink at us. Santa Claus idea number two. Kids aren't happy with the Christmas gifts they've gotten, be them giant toy sets of the latest kid movie or full football gear. The parents are sad. Everyone's depressed. Until the kids open a six-pack of Sam Adams that's under the tree, the parents look at each other, thrilled but confused, as if asking, Did you? Sam winks at us. Oh, apparently you're not allowed to infer that lower class people drink beer to get trashed. Again, target audience people. Who we fooling? Not the little kids, I guarantee that. Inference of lower class drinkers idea number one. A guy offers a bum a Budweiser to warm him up on a cold winter's night. The bum looks at the man like he's crazy. I only drink Sam Adams, the stinky bum replies. Inference of lower class drinkers idea number two. At a baseball game, disgusted fans are throwing their cups of beer at the players. One person in the stands is about to do the same, but then he notices he's drinking Sam Adams. He then looks to his left, grabs the person's Bud Light, and throws it over. The beer vendor turns to us. The vendor's really cartoon Sam Adams. Wink. Oh, God forbid you make false promises in a beer commercial. False promise idea number one. Sam Adams. Great for colds. But above all, no indecency. That's the main point, I assume. Don't be indecent. And who's to say what's indecent or not, though? Especially after you've downed a few. Indecency idea number one. In a trashy southern strip joint, a woman swallows a Sam Adams through her pussy. Someone offers her champagne. She looks at him in disgust. I'm not a whore. Indecency idea number two. A man is walking the streets of Washington, D.C. He sees a woman get run over by a car. He sees a person get mugged. He takes a swig of a Sam Adams. Suddenly, the White House blows up. Holy shit, I can't wait to tell my friends about this amazing fucking beer. Indecency idea number three. Two 20-something males are drinking brown bag beers on the street. A cop, undercover in a family station wagon, pulls up to them, catching them like deer in headlights. The cop starts writing them a ticket. Midway through writing, he asks what the volumes of the beers are, how many ounces. One of the guys pulls his Sam Adams Boston Lager out of the brown bag and shows the cop. 12 American ounces, he replies, and the cop is stunned. Sam Adams? Why didn't you say so? The cop takes the beer with the bag halfway on, throws the bag out of his car window, covers the beer with a shiny maroon silk sleeve, and hands it back. Sorry for bothering you. Have a good night, gentlemen. That's it. Those were some of my ideas. Maybe I was a little off the mark, but at least I tried, goddammit. My first light beer commercial idea, ready? A man is unconscious in a hospital bed, possibly in a coma. Family and friends surround the bed as they debate with a doctor about pulling the plug on the young man's life. We see inside the dying man's head. He is getting closer to the light at the end of the tunnel. Family and friends come to the conclusion of not pulling the plug, but using the defibrillator one more time, even though there really is no point. The man gets closer to the light. He stands in his own head wearing all white, reaching for the light. We get closer, seeing that at the end of the tunnel is Bud Light, giving off glorious illumination. In real life, the man is jolted by a doctor. In the man's head, he's about to grab the beer with a goofy grin as the hand of God twists off the cap. Suddenly, the beer goes further away. His joyous look turns to confusion and pain. In the regular world, he pops upright, alive. His friends and family cheer in amazement. His wife, drinking a Guinness, leans over to kiss him as the doctor exclaims what a miracle took place. The young man slaps his wife hard across the face. Her beer crashes to the ground. Even in death, you bitch. Even in death. Undaunted by my lack of return calls, I tried to win a big money contest held by Jell-O. Just rate how Jell-O plays a role in your family, and you'll get cash money. I never got the money, but obviously that's because my letter, which you'll hear in a second, must have gotten lost in the mail. Here it is. When I was a kid, my mom would cut our hair. It wasn't nearly as disastrous as you might think. She was a licensed beautician. Thing was, I was a very antsy kid, and my sudden movements led me to getting my ears cut more times than I can remember. As though it were her fault, I jumped and squirmed for no reason. She'd always apologize and make my favorite Jell-O pudding, pistachio, as compensation. Soon, instead of complaining about getting cut, I'd jump for joy every time. The scissors barely rubbed your ear. Doesn't matter. It's time for Jell-O. I remember being in the fourth grade and having this childhood crush on a girl in our neighborhood. She'd come over to our house to play with me in our big yard. All day long, I thought about playing games with her. One summer day, I found out she never learned to ride a bike. Her parents were too busy, and they never had time to play with their daughter. I found it sad that a 10-year-old didn't know how to ride a bike. With a little coaxing, her free spirit won out, and I attempted to guide her through bike riding, as my dad had done for me. She soon had pedaling down, and, as I was taught, I let the bike go when I was sure she had control. After about 15 feet, she fell to the ground, cutting her knee. Looking at the blood, she broke into tears. I helped her back to the yard and immediately ran inside. Soon I came back out to tend to my wounded dove. In my hand, Jell-O's pistachio pudding. She was instantly healed. Through bike riding, skateboarding, and various horseplay, she found herself in quite a few scrapes, and I soon found myself quite the cook. Jell-O pistachio pudding really was a cure-all. After graduation, we went our separate ways. We became extremely close in high school, but life made us lose touch. 10 years later, we met at our high school reunion. The magic was immediately rekindled. We sat and talked the entire night. After being crowned king and queen of the reunion, we went back to our seats. Just before sitting down, she smacked her knee in the sharp corner of our table. She tried to silence her yell as she sat down. You okay? Is it just me, or does every day with you end up in pain? Stay right there. I immediately ran to the high school's cooking room. I spent many classes here when I tried taking all the easy high school courses. Soon I was back in the auditorium by my lady's side, and a nice fake crystal dish, Jell-O pistachio pudding. I can still see the smile on her face. How responsible exactly is Jell-O for our happiness? I'm not too sure. All I know is that we are now married with 2 kids, and we've never been happier. I also know 3 entire generations that are forever in love with Jell-O pistachio pudding. Our sincere thanks, the Malley family. Huh? Pretty fucking good, right? Huh? Not bad. It's not the worst. It's not the worst. Soon, after I was done with all these ingenious ideas, I had enough money to finally move out of my house again. Not because of these ideas, mind you. I found a beautiful house that was subletting. The owner, Mark, explained how the house was big to accommodate his wife and her 3 kids when they were still married. Now that they were going through the divorce, the house was the ultimate bachelor pad. If only the 3rd roommate we had wasn't pure psycho. It turns out one night before I moved in, Christina, our third roommate, went into Mark's room when he was sleeping and woke Mark up by sucking his dick. When Mark woke up, Christina took all her clothes off and tried to seduce him. She said it was okay to fuck her condomless because of some inherited condition that left her unable to get pregnant. The next day, she admits she may have exaggerated a little. When she went to see a doctor to see if she was able to get pregnant despite some internal problems, the doctor said, "Yeah, sure, you can get pregnant. You're playing with a loaded gun." Christina ends up pregnant and has a miscarriage. I think. I was never really able to understand her. Then I moved in. The first weekend I was there, we all went out because I was never 21 in Somerset, and I never scoped out the bars we had. We all did our separate thing and met up at the end of the day to go to a restaurant. Mark and I are eating like pigs at an all-you-can-eat buffet. I'm laughing insanely because I heard someone at another table say the word penis, and Christina jumps on top of our table and tears off all her clothes, yelling, "I am the walrus! Goo-goo-gajube!" I'm just kidding. She ends up crying at the table how Mark doesn't care about her, even though they have no relationship and it was always understood that there would never be one. Then she goes and sits at a table of total strangers and starts telling them her life story. Right away, I can tell she was one of those people who gets upset the more she drinks, which I can never understand. If you're going to be an alcoholic, at least have a good time. Anyway, we're in the car pulling out of the parking lot and it seems like we have a flat. Mark goes out to check and when he closes the door, that's when the emotional waterfall begins to pour. She starts telling me the story I just shared with you. "Yeah, you know, Christina, that's your business. I don't think it's right that I get involved." Now, normally I would love a story like that, but there was just a little too much crying to care. And I hate crying. It's weird to look at my girlfriend and see how much fun we're having and think how weird it'll be when the time comes when we'll hate each other's very existence. I hate my girls crying the most because girls and their crying is unfair. My friend Charlie is in hate with his wife. He won't even go through the motions anymore. His only job is to bring his wife a Snapple lemon iced tea while she slaves at the laundromat, and he'll say he'll do it within the next 15 minutes while having no intention. "Just oil a wheel every now and again," I tell him. "Even if it's fake, she wants you to acknowledge that you understand she's at the laundromat." "You want to funnel a beer?" "Yes, I do." Later on in his apartment, I bring the Snapple up again. "Shouldn't you bring her the Snapple?" "It's just a Snapple. She can get water at the laundromat just the same." Oh, Charlie. An ounce of bullshit is worth a pound of pain. But I guess you can only keep faking for so long until you snap. Anyway, the next morning, Christina goes over to Mark's locked bedroom door and starts pounding on it. They need to talk, she tells him, but he doesn't come out for hours, as if they'll never run into each other living in the same house. Christina gets progressively worse and more psychotic as the weeks go on. Soon Mark, also a Harley rider, is down at Daytona's annual bike week, and I'm still in Somerset with Psycho, who lost all grip of reality. One day, I'm getting out of the shower as she comes home wasted, and she bangs on the bathroom door yelling. Then she yells that I'm a child molester and I should die. I get out of the room and I ask her what she's even talking about. "Why are you talking so stupid?" "Oh, you're stupid? I didn't know you're stupid." Christina, you're like 25 years old. You're talking like you're in elementary school." "Oh, are you in elementary school? I thought you were in kindergarten." "Yeah, all right. I'm calling the police and telling them you hit me with the bathroom door." So I hand her the cordless and press the on button. "Okay, quit talking stupid." As I walk upstairs to my room, she pretends to dial the police. "Oh, thank you, Sheriff," she yells so I can hear. "This will be taken care of? Great. Thank you, Mr. Officer. He will be punished severely? Outstanding." And then the kicker, the most insane laughter I've ever heard in my life. "Thank you so much, Mr. Policeman. Thank you." I couldn't figure out why her previous marriage didn't work out. Then the next day, she walks in the house trashed again. "I hate my life. I feel suicidal. If I die, I fucking die. I just want to die. If I believed in God, I'd kill myself." Wouldn't it be easier to kill yourself if you thought there wasn't a God? Then before I can forget how I'm afraid she'll trash my computer, I also got from Finger Hut, someday when I'm at work and feel pity for her sad existence, she starts yelling at me for locking the deadbolt and causing her that aggravation when she stumbled to find the right key. Then she throws things around the house. Then she realizes she locked herself out of her bedroom. And though the lock was one of those you just push from the inside and open by sticking a coat hanger in the little hole from the outside, she was stumped. I fell asleep that night to the sound of frustration and her melodious crying. I'm checking on new apartments one day because of Psycho, and I see a for rent sign across the way. I go up to the house and see a nameplate that reads Ethel Gray. I realize she was born with this name, but how did I just know that she was an old, old lady? And she was old, and I instinctively asked if I could powder her breasts. I was in my new apartment when Mark returned home. He realized how worse Psycho had gotten. He kicks her out and I move back in. And then we get another female roommate. I think you realize how bad you eat when you see someone whose eating habits are just so wrong. Our new roommate was pleasantly plump, and for breakfast, she made a pizza and a diet iced tea. She thinks it'll all balance out. Then for lunch, she gets a couple grease burgers from Wendy's as she bitches about her weight. Somewhere Jenny Craig was rolling in her grave. Mark had this unbearably loud alarm clock that he never heard go off. I've gotten used to it, but the first night our roommate moved in, it was new to her. Later that day, when I asked if it scared her because I thought I heard her leave when it went off, I found out she thought it was our fire alarm, so she decided it would just be best if she just left the house. Thanks, hero. It was fun living with Mark, though, despite the two nutballs. Mark was a biker, as I've said, and he was part of Somerset's little Hell's Angels group. The group looked out for me. That's right. I was raised by bikers. Bikers are the greatest guys in the world. They're just looking for a good time, and the biker bars we used to go to were some of the coolest places I've seen. The only bad habit I got living there was drinking too much. It was the armed forces all over again. It was like California with no clubs. I took one of those alcoholic quizzes you see in the back of health magazines to see if you have a problem. Do you have a drinking problem quiz? Beer starter questions. 1. Do you drink more than 3 beers a week? 2. Do you ever find yourself drinking alone? 3. Do you have a complete tap system in your garage? 4. Whenever you leave the local deli without purchasing beer, does the shop owner appear confused and he asks, "No beer today?" 5. If you go on vacation for a week, does said shop owner's inventory get all screwed up? 6. Do any of the deli workers at said deli not understand how you are alive? 7. When people come over your house to visit, do they, as a token of hospitality, hand you 3 40-ounce beers? 8. Do 22-ounce bottles look tiny? 9. When you read that malt liquor has twice the alcohol per volume of regular beer, did you get upset thinking about all the time you wasted? 10. Ever wake up in the morning wondering how the chainsaw lying next to you got there? 11. Does throwing up not necessarily mean the party's over? 12. When you die, do you want to be buried in a beer? Give yourself 0 points for every no and 600 points for every yes. Give yourself 7,000 bonus points if you have a beer in your hand right now. I feel you should always carry a quarter with you in case you need to make an emergency phone call. You should always have an extra $20 as an emergency backup. And you should always have 2 spare 40s in the fridge, because you never know. And on our first date, I'll buy you your very own 40. That's right. In the beginning, you don't have to drink from the same bottle, baby. When I get home after a hard day of work at the office, I go to the fridge and I find the one I love. I sit back on the couch and I stare at my beloved. Honey, I'm home. Show me some love. Then I pop off her cap and look her in the eye. Baby, you have some susplaining to do. Then I drink down the goodness. Every time I open my refrigerator, all the bottles start trembling. Remember the glory days of the Rat Pack? Remember Sinatra, Bing Crosby? Remember all the hip cat-cat-cats and the la-la ladies? They were boozing it up on screen. They glorified the drinks. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. I want to make alcoholism cool again. It only works if you work it. 24 hours in a day, 24 beers in a case. I didn't just make that up. My mom wrote me recently asking if I drink too much. I said no. She then made a note of the fact that when my brother and sister came down to see me do stand-up or I visited them in Philadelphia, they saw me drinking beer even in the mornings. Touché, mother. Touché. Crayola should come up with a beer color. Think of my love of beer as this. Okay, close your eyes and think of something you really, really like. Maybe it's a nice sunset or your parents. Maybe it's your life mate, a cute puppy, or helping people. Remember, keep your eyes closed. Have you come up with it? Okay, now open your eyes. I just took your beer. George Bush Jr., probably the single most controversial president we'll ever have in my lifetime, was a big drinker in his day. People think that made him dumb. I say, so what? Are we taking a spelling bee or are we dropping bombs? Lee Greenwood sang it best, brothers. Besides, Bush doesn't drop bombs on his own. Bush, you're in trouble.
What?
We got word you've been dropping bombs last night.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Consider this a warning. Now, did you brush your teeth? Breath test. And then the president breathes on his advisor, and the advisor recoils. Oh, shit.
But I did brush.
I know. I'm just joshing. Go back to sleep. Hehe. Okay. I have friends that were alcoholics, and to see what they went through, I checked out an AA meeting with one of them. The meeting begins with a speaker telling his life story for a good half hour. The story is about how he had everything and started dabbling in drugs. He then got addicted and lost it all. Boring! After that, we went around the room celebrating major milestones off of booze as the money basket got passed around. People were 10, 15, 50 years, drink and drug free. Then we went smaller and people named days, 46 days, 27 days, a good week. Not to be undone, I raised my hand. Drink and drug free for one day. I got the biggest applause. Then we went around the room and people got problems off their chest. My buddy went first and he complained about his job, his neighborhood, his money situation, and his girlfriend. At the end of his venting, someone looked at him and said, "Thanks for sharing." I almost bolted out of my seat and beat the prick for being a sarcastic fuck. Later, I found out that's what they do. "Thanks for sharing" is a pat on the back. They thank you for sharing, then they move on. How about helping me out, you self-centered sons of bitches? Put down the needle and give me some advice. No one has any inside knowledge. Not one of you's ever lived with a bitch. Nobody. I have to tell you, I have never heard so many depressing stories in one sitting. After an AA meeting, you need a drink. If I ever go to an AA meeting with a friend now, I pass out slips of paper during the first guy's story that reads, "Relapse 2025, be there." Then every so often, throughout the night, I pass out follow-up information as to what major well-known landmark it'll be at. "Relapse 2025, the drink to end all drinks." When I get them out of the woodwork, you better make some fucking room. It's obvious, though, why I drink. It's a cheap way to forget about your problems. But drinking is only a temporary solution. When you're sober, things only get worse. I agree, and that's why I don't take breaks. KeithandTheGirl.com